I tried to go to Mark in Las Vegas before, but was disconnected. Now he's back. Hey, Mark.
Oh, hi. Hi, Ian.
Hi. Open lines.
Okay, great. This is the second time I got to talk to you. I'm thankful I got to, you know, talk to you again. And I have a story I'd like to tell about a mysterious salt shaker that I had like a long, long time ago where I used to live at.
A salt shaker, did you say?
Yeah, yeah. What happened was I used to work for Scott Paper Company, and my I lived with my bachelor uncle for a short time, and this is back in South Jersey, and in the Pinelands. And anyway, I came home one night from work, and there was a salt and pepper shaker set that he had on top of the stove. And the salt shaker was wider at the bottom than at the top, and it was tilted on its edge, balanced perfectly on its edge. And I think it was leaning to the left, if I can remember right, if that matters. But I didn't think too much about it at first. I just set it back down, and because he had a cat, and I thought, well, maybe the cat ran up on the stove and knocked into it, and maybe it fell part way over, and it might have been leaning against the wall, and I didn't really examine it that closely. But then it kept happening. I'd come home from work, and I'd see the salt shaker tilted on its edge. Then I started looking more closely at it and seeing that, you know, there was nothing holding it there. It wasn't against the wall, nothing like that. And, you know, of course, I became, I tried to do it myself after I would set it back down. I tried to balance it myself, and I couldn't do it. And so, you know, I told my uncle about it, and he kind of like was skeptical. He didn't really seem like he totally believed that it was happening. So I told him, I said, well, look, the next time it happens, I'll leave it like that so you can see it.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I did. And then he got to see it himself. And, you know, I don't think he was doing it because he seemed surprised too. And, you know, he tried to make it balance on its edge also. He finally did get it that way by like shaking the salt where it was level as it was tilted. It took him a long time, but he finally was able to do it. But we never figured out why that was happening and how it was happening. And then finally it was gone. And I asked him what happened to the salt shaker. And he said, well, he said, I saw it was bothering you. He said, so I threw it across the street into the woods. And I kind of got a little upset because I was more curious than scared. And I, even though it was kind of creepy, you know, coming home by yourself and seeing that. Because, you know, we always work different shifts. Same days, all but different shifts. So, but you know, when I was working, I'd come home and, you know, he wouldn't be there. And but anyway, he threw it across the street into the woods, so he said. Yeah. And said, well, it must have bothered you more than me because you're the one who threw it away.
Yeah, really. So, well, you know, that's the mysterious Pine Barrens for you, right? I mean, that's the Pinelands. Where that wouldn't be even the most mysterious thing that has ever been related from that strange part of the country where some people say there are all number of paranormal activities. So not saying it was the Jersey Devil that was coming into your house and tilting over your salt shaker, but that is a great story. I appreciate it. Let me go to Chance, who's in San Antonio on Coast to Coast. Chance?
Yes, hi. This is one that I'd tried to tell, and apparently last time didn't have the patience to hear me out. So please try to hear this. 17 years old.
No. I just because you grabbed the wheel, though, we're not going to – I don't know how long is this story going to take, so I won't agree to that because I got a lot – the whole – everybody else is trying to get on too. How long is the story?
Okay, it's not that long, all right?
Okay.
So 17 years old, I meet my dad for the first time. My mother takes him in the neighborhood for a walk. I'm taking the trash out to the alley, okay? It's nighttime. to the right of me, over my neighbor's pecan tree, which is the highest pecan tree in the neighborhood, I see a elongated diamond-shaped ship, all silver, no sound. This blows me away, okay? So I hid behind my pecan tree to watch it, and I'm, you know, trying to figure out what it was, okay? It didn't make any sound. I couldn't see any writing on it or anything like that. I try to get the witness, okay? They were walking in the neighborhood. The front door's open. I run back outside, go behind the pecan tree again, watch it more. Then the last memory I have is lights start to come off the top of it. I saw flashes, and then I ran, okay, towards the house, all right? I do not remember going to sleep or anything. I wake up in my bed the next day. I sit up. It feels strange. I look around. I ask myself, why are you looking around? Is it to, you know, check everything? Is everything okay? And I remembered, oh, that sighting, okay? My mom is an atheist. We were atheists, okay? So I didn't really want to talk to them about it, you know? So I let it go, okay? And I had a lot of distractions to fill up my time, okay, after that, right? Lots of things, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, all right? So I thought it was random, okay? I consider it to be random. 25 years later, I'm divorced, and I'm in a homeless shelter, okay? It's the middle of the day. I'm on the concrete in front of a fan. I'm sitting on my butt. So I'm sore, and I'm moving off my butt, and I'm suctioned. All of a sudden, only the crown of my head becomes suctioned to the ground, okay? And when this happens, I'm, you know, of course, I'm wondering what in the heck's going on. I start testing myself, you know, cognitively, make sure I'm okay. Everything checks out, numbers, dates, and names, and all this kind of stuff, memories. I'm okay. I'm okay. And but then I get the sensation. Okay, it looks like a tunnel type of thing. I feel like I'm going through a tunnel, all right? And I hear these sounds going by me, like woof, woof, woof. And at the end of that thing, I'm revisited by what looked like the same object that I saw at 17, okay? But this time, it spoke to me, all right? So it's talking to me about my situation, started asking me about what I was doing and why I was, you know, like so out of it, you know, and like, you know, because I'd had everything stolen from me. And by that point, all my tools and everything, I'm an artist and, you know, somewhat of a poet. So, right. And a musician, you know, became later, but anyhow, so it spoke to me, it talked to me about stuff. And I'm telling this thing, you know, what do you mean? I've been through a lot, you know, and I have, and so it's basically telling me, you know, it's not over for you. And what is the thing talking about, you know? And it's saying, well, you know, it's asking me about, do you realize the planet is in peril, you know? And okay. I'm saying, well, you know, yeah, because I often, you know, I'd be out there protesting and, you know, taking on, you know, people like Beck or, you know, Hannity or any of these guys, right? Limbaugh. So I'm kind of a thorn in the side of people. And I thought, you know, I've done my part in saying, you know, but that's fine. But, you know, okay. you're not done. There's more to do. You have work to do. And I'm saying, I'm one person, you know, and it's saying, don't worry, you're not alone. And I'm saying, what do you mean by that? And this thing, you know, returned me through the same way I came. I went back through this tunnel thing, and then I was able to lift my head up, you know, from the ground eventually. And I went aimlessly walking. I left the homeless shelter after that because it was kind of a weird thing to happen.
Okay.
And I go walking aimlessly. I come to a bridge where there's a mural. Okay. It's about.
Okay. I'm going to need to get a. I'm going to. Can you cut to the chase at the end of the story? Because we're already like 4 minutes in. So you got to help me out here a little bit because, like I said, I got a lot of people who are hanging on. I'm sorry if that seems rude to you, but. I got to balance out everybody. But so tell me what, in the end, what's our takeaway from this?
Okay. So on the other side of the wall, it was all the artist signatures that contributed to the piece. So I felt like, okay, this is what the thing was talking about. You're not alone. You're an artist. You're supposed to be out there. You're supposed to be doing your thing in order to change the world, to change minds, to make it a better place. Is that good for you? Did that work?
That's very interesting. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Let me get to Don, who's hanging on patiently in Kent, Ohio, on Coast to Coast. Don?
Brother Eon, thank you for taking my call, and happy Sabbath.
And to you.
I got a kick out of the methane man. Now, that's good talk radio. Nowhere else are you going to get somebody to take a call like that.
Well, you know, let's be clear where he was going with that, though, too. Right. Yeah, and, you know, it's one thing when Howard Stern does that. It's another thing when he rips off National Lampoon with that.
Yeah.
Now, this guy's going in a totally, now he's ripping off that. I don't know. So glad you enjoyed it. But where are you going to take us?
Oh, you know, I want to talk about Dr. Michael Salas. It's his book, Kennedy's Last Stand. And is nearly exposing the UFOs that led to his assassination. And I'm going to dovetail this into President Trump forming the U.S. Space Force that was set up basically to, you know, do the final disclosure truth about UFO and alien technology. And I believe that every impeachment, accusation, investigation lodged against him was to throw the Americans off track. It's a diversion, and it was to keep the truth from coming out. What say you?
Interesting. If you go to coasttocoastam.com tonight, you'll see there's a story. Space Force is being tasked with taking over the lion's share of the investigations into UFO reports, and they're not happy about it. They're afraid that it's going to ruin their credibility. The Navy up until this point had been the ones that were doing it with help from the Air Force. We all know about Project Blue Book. But, I don't know that Space Force is down with the idea of being connected to the UFO story. But why do you think that that was why they were created?
I think that, Kennedy and Forrestal were friends, and Forrestal allegedly committed suicide. Kennedy wanted to expose it. Bill Clinton comes on board, tries to get his family friend Webster Hubble to investigate not only Kennedy assassination, but the UFO tie-in, and that really kind of didn't go anywhere. And even listen to some of the guests that you have on. When they go for a FOIA, Freedom of Information, everything is heavily redacted or crossed out. What are they hiding? I mean, you know, Roswell was over 70 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, there's only the executive branch has to give up FOIA information. So that is, you can request for information that's been declassified from other agencies. And frequently that's what comes out the most heavily redacted. But FOIA is supposed to not be that way unless it's sensitive, and you can have a judge review it and make a determination on whether or not that's legit. Let me go to Toxic Reverend on Coast to Coast AM. He's on a wild card line. Hey, buddy.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, I'm so sorry to hear about Jack.
You're very nice to say that. And I'll tell you a quick funny story about you. So I looked at the screen, and your name was up on the screen. And then Dan said, Dan Galante running the board said, oh, there's a guy, Toxic Reverend, just wanted to bring attention to that you were up on the screen under the name Toxic Reverend. And I realized that I see you so often in my Twitter feed. I didn't even blink at seeing Toxic Reverend. Other people might find that unusual, but not me. I was like, oh, it didn't even register.
Well, I do put out stuff, and that's why I'm an alleged villain. But, you know, that's part of, too, what I wanted to think like with my dog. And I know that, you know, Jack passed, but I know other people love animals, too, on the show. She had Lyme's disease. She was limping for about 11 months. I thought I was going to put her down. She couldn't get up and come in from going to the bathroom. And I got her well. I got her well, though. Where I looked into it was not only the spirit teeth, there's a mycoplasma infection that's known to coexist, you know, co-infection with it. And that co-infection, that mycoplasma alone can cause arthritis. They found it with rheumatoid arthritis. They found it with diabetes, asthma. In fact, they found this mycoplasma with a lot of these age-related illnesses that are in there with the high mortality rates for COVID.
Sure.
Strangely enough, right? And I don't know why they ever gave Zithromax, an antibiotic with hydrochloroquine to treat it, but it is what it is.
You know, anyway. And I'll tell you that, like, for Jack, I there's a lot of people who have equal success, I think, with CBD, with pets. I tried that a little bit with Jack at one point. It didn't seem to make a difference, but for him, it wasn't so much the arthritis as it was just the blindness and the confusion. And
yeah, and that same thing is associated with my eyes. But I'll get back to the CBDs. There's a special thing on that where you get the ones that can really get you stoned, but you don't heat them, you won't get high. And then you can get the really high amounts of CBDs that you need, which you won't get from those oils.
Yeah.
And one of the doctors here in California has explained it very well in videos. You know, and he's here, he practices, and he was prescribing it for years. He's been on it. Matter of fact, he's helped to get legalized. Anyways, with Zoe, he responded to the antibiotics, but they weren't working so well because these mycoplasmas and the spirochete both respond to antibiotics. And what I found out was when you add silver, it can increase the antibiotics effectiveness hundreds of times. I made my own colloidal silver. I injected it into the doxycycline with a syringe, covered that in peanut butter, and gave it to her. And it worked.
And it worked.
Oh, she's walking now. So she stopped limping just before Christmas last year. Still not limping.
Well, I love that.
So, yeah. She was limping for 11 months.
I think that's great. And I remember when colloidal silver.
But I had to mix it. I had to mix that properly with the antibiotics. Like I said, I got a needle and injected it into the capsule. The other thing is, the other part of it is nutritionally, because with or without the antibiotics and that, she won't get well or stay well without the right nutritional support.
Right.
So it comes into the omega-3s, and people will call it lipid replacement therapy, but it works.
I'd throw that
out there for other people in the audience if they're interested in that. You know, the information's there. And the main thing about it is there are organic mycoplasmas that have not been messed with that could, you know, coexist with it. But the main one is a Mycoplasma fermentaeus, which is patented by the United States Army. And I'm going to tweet you the patent number. I've already posted it on my timeline.
I will retweet it if I get it, and thank you. And I'll see you on Twitter later on, I'm sure. Do we have time? I guess we don't. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour. Okay, so hang on, hang on, Matthew, and anybody else who's waiting. I will get to you in our last half hour of open lines on Coast to Coast. That is interesting about CBD oil and with that for pets, because I do know that a lot of the pets respond to that particular thing, and it's a high enough dose. I hadn't heard about colloidal silver. I remember when colloidal silver was this big craze, and I can't ever forget that person who drank so much of it that they turned themselves kind of this purpley silver. I wonder how that ever worked out. Or, you know, maybe they also would make a perfect superhero. They just got to kind of go with it. Lean into the fact that you're already turned your skin a different color. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. So many people on open lines hanging on right now. Let's get them in relative order for how long they've been hanging on. West of the Rockies, C is in Anchorage on Coast to Coast. Capital C, is that what you go by?
Yeah. I was just kind of trying to be quiet about my name.
Okay, why?
I'll give you my name's Cecil. I'm an airline pilot. So my stories are, I'll give you three quick, briefly experiences I've had. And the airline community is small, so I'm probably going to be dialed in and targeted and ridiculed, which is fine. Number one, around 2004, between 2004 and 2006, we were leaving the Bering Sea, and I was a co-pilot back then. And we were flying to Anchorage, Alaska from the Bering Sea, St. Paul. And we were at our cruise altitude, and it was my leg, so I'm flying, and I'm on autopilot, and I'm checking the gauges, looking at this and that, and you know, occupying with the autopilot on, so I'm playing a crossword puzzle. And I was thinking of whatever word I was doing. I looked at my captain. I looked out the window. But mind you, flying eastbound, the setting sun is off my right shoulder. It's behind me. It's setting in the west. So the sun, the orb of the sun is on the left.
Right.
And I'm looking over to my captain, and I see an orange ball orb out of his window, and I'm staring at it because it catches me and I'm mesmerized. And then my captain looks at me, and then he looks out the window. He sees it. Then he looks back at me. So it's my leg, so I'm in charge. So I call air traffic control and say, do we have any traffic in our area? We're at 23,000 feet, and we're in the clouds. And, there's military aircraft going. It looked absolutely like an afterburner to me. It was small, then it grew, and then it disappeared. Because, yes, you have military aircraft 600 miles to the northwest of you. You cannot see 600 miles at 23,000 feet.
Can't imagine. Nope. Interesting. Second story?
The second story is flying. Now, this is a good one. Okay, quickly. We're flying out west, deadliest catch type story. I'm flying out of Alaska, Dutch Harbor, and flying back to Anchorage on a starless or a moonless night, which is always awesome because we turn the cabin lights down. And I tell my co-pilots, we turn the lights down, and then you put your hand on the throttle so you can feel. And you can feel when the engines, if anything's anomalous. But you're looking up. You're looking out the window. You just reach forward in the cockpit, and you just look. You can see the Milky Way. It's amazing. We would always have contests. How many satellites can you count orbiting? And so we're over Lake Iliamna, flying northwest back to Anchorage, Alaska. And all of a sudden, about my 10 o'clock was like a star. It was a star. And all of a sudden it started growing, and it grew, and it grew, and it grew. It came a bright light. It grew at such an exponential rate that I called air traffic control and say, hey, we have traffic. And in my mind, I thought it was a jet coming at me. It came to the point where I was going to disconnect the autopilot. That's how fast it grew, and then it disappeared.
So what's your takeaway from all of those stories? What do you,
what
does that leave
you believe? I'm thinking with the way the government is becoming, starting to divulge what's that there is unidentified, whatever they call that, whatever the new term for UFOs are, but yeah.
Right. UAPs.
And the third one was coincides with the second one. I was told my co-pilot about 2 weeks later, I was flying back to Anchorage. I said, we were just flying over this lake, and I thought it was a quasar. It had to be quasar because we couldn't find it on the TCAS. We call it a fish finder. It's a traffic control alarm system.
Right.
That's how fast that absorbs you. That you got to take evasive action. And so, anyway, I was telling them, I was like, we're just sitting in the cockpit and we're looking out the window. It's the same moonless night. And I told him what was happening, and then it happened again. And then the next one, the fourth one, which I don't have time. You probably don't have.
No, I don't. Let me ask you, what do your other pilot friends think about this? I mean, don't they have similar stories? I mean, obviously, the guy sitting next to you has got a similar story.
That's what I was getting at, because the first time I heard all this, I thought it was a bunch of baloney, because I ended up getting paired with one of the other captains that did the same thing. He called out traffic near Elmendorf Base in Anchorage. You're coming into land in Anchorage, and they were calling traffic in front of them, and they didn't have it on radar. And I was right behind them coming out of a snowstorm, and I saw the reflection off the water, and they were saying, it's a helicopter, it's off the water, we can see it. And they say, there's nothing on radar. There's nothing on radar, there's no military operations. I'm just like, what?
Well, at least it should come as some kind of comfort, perhaps cold comfort, but that you aren't the only one in your airline pilot community that's had these kind of experiences. Not to mention, and I appreciate you passing along your name in that way, obviously a close-knit community. I don't think you have anything to worry about in terms of commercial pilots feeling like what you're saying is out of the ordinary, nor, you have a distinctive vocal pattern. So I think they would have caught on between C and Cecil that was you, but I appreciate the background. And again, just it's another data point or two or three about this developing story. Wildcard Line, CJ is in Beaverton, Oregon on Coast to Coast. CJ?
Ian, how are you doing on this great night, my friend?
Good. Running out of time, but trying to get everybody on. Where are you going to take us?
I'm going to make this short and sweet, being that we're talking about UFOs, space, and some people were talking about heroes and superheroes. And to me, this is kind of like a two-part thing, and I'll finish it real quick. I'd have to include Captain James T. Kirk as
a superhero?
To me, he was, because he, to me, he paved the way for so much space, you know, phenomena. And he's my hero, too, because you were talking to that alien girl earlier. And Captain James T. Kirk, you know, he was an intergalactic stud, and he got...
He was a Lothario. Yeah, he would have been going nuts at that call. For all I know, William Shatner would be, too, if he was listening to that call.
Well, I want you to know, you inspired me tonight, Ian, talking to her, and I have a proposal for you. Here's a proposal. I have a little bit of background in the entertainment industry, but I'm going to make you a proposal. You help hook me up with her, and I'd like to follow in the steps of Captain James T. Kirk. You hook me up with the alien girl, and through the paranormal dating site, and I will make it legendary. And after I hook up with her, and the adventure begins, I will, when we go on tour and do the book and the movie on everything, on the first guy to score since Captain Kirk with an
alien
chick, I'll split the revenue with you.
No, I appreciate it. I'm going to leave the go where no man has gone before story up to you. And you sign up for Paranormal Date and live long and prosper. Annie is in Alabama on Coast to Coast. Annie?
Hello, Ian. Thank you for taking my call.
It's good to hear your voice.
Did you get your monk fruit and try that yet?
No, but I will. I'm glad you reminded me. Thank you.
Well, I've been getting some calls from someone who claims to work for Liberty University online, and I'm not sure I believe him anymore. I did believe him at first, but then he told me today that I can't get any actual physical textbooks, so I don't even believe him. I believe that someone is running a scam and got a hold of my number. What would you think? Wouldn't most universities, if they're reputable, have an option for people to get the actual textbook so they wouldn't have to go through so much eye strain?
Well, I'll be honest. Most students don't want to pay for the book, the paper book, the physical book. Most students want the digital version. They're less expensive. They're easier to transport. You don't have a backpack full of 70 pounds worth of books. That part isn't unusual. It is unusual that somebody was talking to you on the phone about that. Are they trying to get money from you to take online courses? And did you sign up for that yourself?
I signed up to get information from Liberty University about online courses, not talk to some scam artist that says I can't get school books if I want to sign up for an online degree.
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest, I teach two classes online. I don't have any school. I don't make them buy a book.
Well, I mean, if you wanted to, couldn't you?
Nope.
If it was a reputable school?
Kansas State University is as reputable or disreputable as any school that is out there. And I am proud to be a Wildcat. And no, we just don't. We try to avoid that, actually, partly because in some ways the whole school book thing became kind of a scam. They charge $80 or $90 for a new book, and then when the student exchanges that back at the end of the year and tries to get money for it, they might get 40% of what they paid for it, but then they turn around and sell it again for 70%. So, yeah, that does not surprise me that if it's a... I don't know. I can't say it for sure because I don't know part of what they do, but I don't, and none of my online courses have physical books. None of them. Does that help?
I wouldn't want to just get rid of them.
I get that. We just don't. They're expensive. It's a lot of paper. They're not. It's not sustainable. Most college students this age aren't interested in things that cost, take a lot of paper and take down a lot of trees. It's just not, it's not what they want environmentally. So I get your eye strain point, and that's a fair one. You could look at getting those special glasses, and a lot of students wear those, that filter out the light that comes from the computer screen and takes almost 90% of the glare and harmful rays away from you, so you don't get eye strain or headaches. But yeah, sorry. I mean, I hope that helps. Not unusual at all. I don't know Liberty's policies, but that's not uncommon for us. In fact, I go out of my way to assign as few books as possible. John is in Westerville, Ohio on Coast to Coast AM. John?
Hi, Ian. Hey. So my story, it was probably around 1997, 98. I was driving in rural Mississippi, right on the Alabama border. I was installing satellite dishes at the time. I was in my early 20s. And I was in Neshoba County. And at the time, I didn't realize the historical significance of Neshoba County. But later, I learned. And it's because of this strange story. It was pouring down rain. I was on a rural highway, and I come upon this car in the middle of the night with these, and the first thing I can see are these tiny headlights, or these tiny taillights, right, that I'm coming up on. And as I get closer to the car, I can see that it's a very old car, like something from the early 60s. Right. And it's kind of this, I don't know, pale yellow at the top, you know, and the bottom half is white. And as I get closer, I can see that the interior light is on. And I can see that there is, as I start to pass it, I can see there's sort of a commotion inside of the car. And so it's driving really slowly, and I get in the left lane, and I go to pass it. And as I'm passing it, I look in, and there's a young man in his early 20s driving the car. There's a girl in the passenger seat, or a woman in the passenger seat in her early 20s. And there are two men in the back seat. So, you know, there's three white people and there's one African-American man in the back seat. And it seemed like they were arguing over a map. And the people in the back seat were pointing at the map. The girl had turned over and was arguing with them about something on the map. And they were all, this is not retro, like people really looked like they were from that era of the early 60s.
I get that. Just to time-wise here, I got about 40 more seconds. But so tell me what happened. What's the upshot of the story?
So I just passed the car, and later, you know, I learned that this area is where, you know, the Cheney Goodman Schwermer murders happened by the Ku Klux Klan. And I just thought to myself, did I just see the ghosts of these slain civil rights, you know, workers from the Freedom Summer of 1964?
That's really interesting. That's a great story, and compelling. I just watched Mississippi Burning again the other night, and so it's fresh in my mind. Thanks for getting that in there. Let me get to Mary from New Jersey on Coast to Coast. That may be all that we have time for. Mary?
Hi, how are you? I had a comment and a question to make it real fast. You know, Paul in the Bible and John in Revelation, the experiences they had. You as a child or an adult, awake or asleep, have you ever had anything like that?
Like what, just to be clear?
Like what they were, you know, he wrote down Revelation, and Paul says whether in or out of the body, like he didn't know where he was. in or out of the body?
John from Patmos.
Oh, I can't hear you. Say that again, please.
Oh, I guess we're breaking up.
My phone just dropped down low.
Okay. Well, then give us a call back sometime, and let me get to Bill in Albany, New York, on Coast to Coast in the minute I have left. Bill?
Hi, Ian. Thanks very much. You had a caller from Minnesota, I think, and I think you gave him a really good response when he was talking about the aerial phenomena, and you mentioned how auroras and others are type of aerial phenomena that we really don't know. And I think that also applies to that rancher who has this place on his ranch where he sees light. And I would just recommend that anyone interested in looking at the possible natural aspects of it, look up ball lightning or look up atmospheric plasma physics. And I did chat with you a little bit at the end of the show once before, the first time I called. And yeah, I think the Navy and all the military are looking into what these are. They were called Foo Fighters back in World War I by fighter pilots who saw these strange lights and atmospheric orbs in the past. So
I appreciate that. I think there's the ball lightning thing is maybe more rare than people are led to believe. But because I was looking that up after a previous conversation on Coast to Coast, I'll take that under advisement for a previous, for the next time we're doing open lines on Coast to Coast. American Phoenix, Heroes of the Pentagon on 9/11, and David Dismulchin, Polka Dot Man, coming up tomorrow night. Hope you listen in for George Norrie. This is Ian Punnett, Deus Tiamat, and I do too.